We'll read the entire psalm, consists of 11 verses. Preserve me, O God, for in thee do I put my trust. O my soul, thou hast said unto the Lord, thou art my Lord, my goodness extendeth not to thee. But to the saints that are in the earth, and to the excellent in whom is all my delight, their sorrows shall be multiplied that hasten after another God. Their drink offerings of blood will I not offer, nor take up their names into my lips. The Lord is my portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. The lions are fallen unto me in pleasant places. Yea, I have a goodly heritage. I will bless the Lord who hath given me counsel. My reins also instruct me in the night seasons. I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore my heart is glad, my glory rejoiceth, my flesh also shall rest in hope. For thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thy Holy One to see corruption. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures forevermore. The Psalms, 150 of them, in the Hebrew is simply entitled Praises. The Psalms are simply songs or hymns that were used in worship. They basically made up Israel's God-breathed, inspired hymn book. The only inspired hymn book there is, right here, Psalms. The Greek word, or Greek verb, from which the noun Psalms comes from, indicates the plucking or twanging of strings. So there's an association with musical accompaniment. There are 150 psalms in our Bibles. In most Bibles, centered above 116 of these psalms are what is known as superscriptions. They are like headlines or titles. And they convey some information, such as authorship, perhaps to whom the psalm was to be dedicated to. Sometimes it contains historical occasion. Sometimes these titles contain simply instruction to the worship director. Sometimes it tells us the type of song that it is. In this 16th psalm, again, it's probably in your Bible. The superscription or heading is Mikdam of David. Mikdam of David. The root of the word Mikdam simply means to stamp or to engrave. It conveys the idea of something so precious that it should be engraved upon very durable material, usually gold. So the word mikdam provides instruction concerning what is to be done with this psalm. It's to be engraved. It is to be stamped upon something durable. In this title, or headline, if you will, Mikdam of David, we are informed, of course, as to the author of the psalm. Is David. So it is a psalm of David. From these superscriptions or titles, whatever you want to call them, we learn that there are at least seven composers of the 150 Psalms, at least seven that are mentioned, and that David wrote at least 75 of the Psalms. So 75 of them are directly ascribed to David. This heading, Mictum of David, also appears in Psalm 56, Psalm 57, Psalm 58, Psalm 59, Psalm 60. So I began to, I read those Psalms to see if there's any similarities between these Mictum of David. And the characteristic of these Psalms is they begin with prayer. And they imply trouble. They abound with a holy confidence or assurance. And they close with a note of victory or with a song of assurance. Mictum of David. Again, something that is to be engraved. What we learn in these Psalms is that though our lives may have some trouble, they ought to be filled with prayer. They ought to abound with confidence in God. And they ought to be filled with praise for God. That's what each one of these Psalms have in common. And though we've read the entire psalm, we want to center our thoughts upon verse 8, just the first part. I have set the Lord always before me. We'll be back, Lord willing, in Psalm 16 tonight, and we'll look at the rest of the psalm. But in those words, I have set the Lord always before me. I believe that provides a key element to living a life of communion with God, a life that overflows with confidence in God, a life that's filled with praise to God. What we read here in these words, I have set the Lord always before me, really is the way to live. Peter quoted this verse on the day of Pentecost, Acts chapter 2, and he made direct application to Christ. So what we read here is something that Christ lived. I have set the Lord always before me. What is contained in this eighth verse describes a right state of soul. And it is a secret to a life of communion with God, overflowing with assurance of God, and filled with praise. It's really, it ought to be a model text for our lives. It needs to be engraved, it needs to be stamped upon our soul. The title of the message, and you'll understand the title as we get closer to the end, You First, and I'll Follow. You First, and I'll Follow. I have set the Lord always before me. The central focus of those words is the Lord. In fact, you read the 16th Psalm, you see that he's the central focus throughout the Psalm. He's mentioned 16 times in the Psalm, either by name or by pronoun. He's referred to by three names or titles. There's the word God in the very first verse, which is the Hebrew word Elohim, meaning Almighty, Faithful One. He is referred to as Lord. First time is in verse 2, all capital letters. Again, Hebrew being Jehovah. the self-existent, eternal, unchanging one. He is also referred to, again, the first time is in verse 2, as Lord, capital L, small case, letters, meaning Adonai, Master. So what he's saying there in verse 2 is, O Jehovah, thou art my Adonai, or thou art my Master. In order to grasp the meaning of verse 8, our view of God must coincide with who God is. And oh, how different the God, quote unquote, that is preached from most pulpits today from the God that is presented in this book. What a difference. The God that is preached in the religious circles of today is a miserable caricature of the God that's presented in this book. The God that is preached today from most pulpits is a blasphemous distortion of God. The God that is preached from most pulpits today is a fabrication, an idol for men to worship. That's all it is. The God that is most commonly presented today is, they don't come out and directly say it, of course, but he's presented as a helpless being, has a disappointed and frustrated God, a mere product of human emotion and ignorance, a God that is beneath man. But when we speak of God, we are talking about the God that is declared, that is revealed in this book. And he is presented as a great God. Numbers 23 and verse 19. God is not a man. God is not a man. We must realize that. God is not a man. In Deuteronomy 10 and verse 17, for the Lord your God is God of gods and Lord of lords, a great God. Deuteronomy 33 and verse 26, there is none like unto God. There is no comparison. In 1 Chronicles 29 and verse 1, thine, O Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the victory and the majesty. For all that is in heaven and in earth is thine. Thine is the kingdom, O Lord. Thou art exalted above head, above all. Psalm 48 and verse 1, great is the Lord. Psalm 86 and verse 10, for thou art great and doest wondrous things. Thou art God alone. Thou art God alone. Psalm 95 verse 3, for the Lord is a great God and a great King above all gods. Psalm 104 verse 1, thou art very great. Thou art clothed with honor and with majesty. In Isaiah 66 and verse 1, thus saith the Lord, the heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool. So you have the expanse of God. Human depravity and human pride loathes the truth and even the suggestion that God orders and controls everything, and that God rules over everything. Human depravity hates that. They can't even stand the suggestion that God is in control. The depravity and pride of man would rather perceive God as a puppet of man with no control whatsoever over the will of man, and would rather perceive him as the clay rather than the potter. But the God that is declared in this book is sovereign ruler and king over all. Hear the words of Psalm 22 and verse 28. For the kingdom is the Lord's, and he is governor among the nations. For he is ruler among the nations. Psalm 103, verse 19. The Lord hath prepared his throne in the heavens, and his kingdom ruleth over all. And then Proverbs 21 and verse 1. The king's heart is in the hand of the Lord, has the rivers of water. So we're told two things there. The king's heart is in the Lord's hand, the rivers of water are in his hand. But he goes on to say, and he turneth it, that is the king's heart, whithersoever he will. God is not a puppet. Human depravity, human pride, prefers a God who is a distant spectator at best, and can't stand the thought of a God that does as he pleases, when he pleases, upon whom he pleases, wherever he pleases. And that is the God that is declared in this book. Psalm 33 and verse 11. The counsel of the Lord standeth forever. The thoughts of his heart to all generations. Well, do you realize we live in a different time? I'm very aware of that. But his counsel extends to all generations. Does not change. Psalm 115, verse 3. But our God is in the heavens, and here's what they can't stand. He hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. And he continues to do so. Isaiah 14, verse 24. Very familiar verses. Surely as I have thought, so shall it come to pass. And I like that word so. So shall it come to pass. In other words, exactly as I've thought, exactly as I have planned, so shall it be. Man can't stand that. And as I have purposed, so shall it stand. Isaiah 14, verse 27, for the Lord of hosts hath purposed. Who shall disannul it? Who can overthrow it? And his hand is stretched out, that is, to perform his purpose. Who can turn it back? Hear God declare in Isaiah 46, verses 9 and 10. For I am God, there is none else. I am God, and there's none like me. Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will do all my pleasure. And I will do all my pleasure. Daniel chapter 4, verse 35. Nebuchadnezzar came to learn this truth. He doeth according to his will in the army of heaven and among the inhabitants of the earth. none can stand or stay His hand. Ephesians 1 verse 11. The purpose of Him who worketh all things after the counsel of His own will. So when we talk about God, we're talking about the God of this book, who is absolutely, intrinsically, self-existently, the Almighty, always able One, the immutable One, the always here, simultaneous, everywhere God, the God that fills yesterday, today, and tomorrow at the same time. The One who is more present than all of our cares, than all of our trials, than all of our afflictions, than all of our storms, than all of our oppositions and problems and difficulties and obstacles. We're talking about omniscient God, the One who has infinite, eternal, and perfect knowledge of all things. We're talking about the One in whom there is no problem, there is no situation that He does not know about, that He does not have the answer for. When we talk about God, we're talking about the God of this book. We're talking about the Creator. We're talking about the Sustainer. We're talking about the One who exceeds all. We're talking about the always faithful One, the gracious One, the merciful One, the absolutely holy One. We're talking about the God who can still part the waters. The God who can still feed His people in impossible circumstances. The God who can still sweeten the bitter waters. The God who can bring down any wall that any enemy may erect. The God who still uses the few and the feeble. The God who can still topple giants. The God who gives victory over insurmountable odds. We're talking about the God of this book. The One that when I fall, He can pick me up. The One in whom when I fail, He forgives me. The One in whom when I am weak, He can strengthen me. The One in whom when I'm lost, He knows the way. He always knows the way. And He knows where I am. The One when we're broken, that can mend us. The One when we're afraid, that can give us courage. The One that when we're in a battle, can bring victory. The One that when we're in a storm, He can shield us, He can cover us, and He can calm the storm. The One in whom when we have a need, He can provide for that need. The One when we feel like we're weighted down, He's the One that can carry the load. And the One when we feel that we can't go on, He's the One who comes and carries us. All the greatness and majesty of the God of this book. With all of that in mind, let's look at the meaning of what David says in verse 8. I have set the Lord always before me. Just how important and extraordinary those words are, again, is seen from the fact that on the day of Pentecost, Peter quoted them and applied them to Christ. Notice in Acts chapter 2, we'll just concern ourselves right now with verse 25. He continues on in verse 26, still quoting the 16th Psalm. But we just want to see what we read here in verse 8. But in Acts chapter 2, verse 25, for David speaketh concerning Him, Christ, I foresaw the Lord always before my face. I foresaw the Lord always before my face. In other words, I have set the Lord always before me is something that Jesus Christ did in living His perfect, God-pleasing, God-glorifying life upon this earth. I have set the Lord always before me. Now only Christ could fully live those words. David could not fully live those words. He's making reference to Christ. Only Christ can fully live those words. I have set the Lord always before me. I have set. That speaks of a resolute act of David. I have set. So what we read here is not an accident. If you set something on that ledge, you do not do that by accident. So what we read here is not an accident. It's not something that David just kind of drifted into. But he says, I have set the Lord always before me. I have set. That speaks of a determined and purposeful act of David. I believe the psalmist is speaking from the depths of his heart. I have set the Lord always before me. And I believe those words, what do those words mean? I believe it's has reference to an acknowledgement and an acute awareness that God is there. I mean, if something is right before your face, you know it's there. You can't deny it. No matter where you go, it's there. So there is an awareness, God is there, or God is here. It is seeing God. It's seeing God. I have set the Lord before my face. Before me. It's seeing God. It's being focused upon God. It's pursuing God. It's knowing and experiencing the nearness of God. I have set the Lord always before me. That means that God is the object of his faith, the object of his hope, and that God's glory is the ultimate end of his actions. I have set the Lord always before me. It is a statement of commitment. It is a statement of purpose. I believe it declares an obsession with God. I have set the Lord always before me. It is recognizing God in an exclusive and specified position in our lives. Before me. Before me. It's not I have set the Lord behind me. Now the truth is, God is behind me. God is to my left, God is to my right, God is in front of me, God is beneath me, God is above me. God is in front of me. But the psalmist says, I have set the Lord always before me. He has an exclusive position in my life. It speaks of the centrality of God in our life. Now, Peter, in translating these words, the Holy Spirit did so, Peter spoke, but in translating these words from Hebrew to Greek, the Hebrew is, I have set the Lord always before me. The translation of that into Greek is, I foresaw the Lord always before my face. Before my face. That enlarges upon the meaning of the word, of verse 8. What does it mean to have the Lord before us? It means He's before my face. It's God in our face. Oh, how we need that today. The God that we've just briefly described. In our face. Always. From this we see, again, it speaks of the position of God in our life. Before me, before my face. It speaks of the pursuit of our life. When something is before you, when something is before your face, I mean, it's right there. It fills the horizon of your vision. Oh, for that to be so. For God to fill the horizon of our vision. It is what you think about. I mean, put something right in front of your face and try to think about something else. I mean, it's right there. You've got to think about it. So when he says, I set the Lord before me, or before my face, that was the thought of his life. In those words, I have set the Lord always before me, or I have set the Lord always before my face, he is saying, I have done this, and it continues to be my purpose and desire that God would fill the horizon of my vision. That God would fill my vision. He is saying, I have done this. It continues to be my purpose and my desire. That I be fixed upon God. That He be in the forefront. I have set the Lord always before me. I have set the Lord always before my face. That speaks of a spiritual condition. It speaks of an attitude and spirit, and here's the title, that says, Lord, you first, I'll follow. That ought to always be our attitude. Lord, you first. And I'll follow. Usually we say that to somebody when something we really don't want to do, you go first. Lord, you first. I'll follow. I have set the Lord always before me. Oh, what a difference in the battles that we find ourselves in if we would take this attitude. Lord, you first, and I'll follow. That is, you don't rush in the battle. Lord, you go first, and I'll follow. That's true with all the problems of life. Lord, you first, I'll follow. That needs to be our attitude. That needs to be our spirit. Now notice the extent of this statement. I have set the Lord always before me. Now again, only Jesus Christ can fully do that during His earthly ministry. But what David is saying here is, this is not to be an occasional thing. This is not something for a few selected times. The word always has reference to time. No matter what the time of the day, I have set the Lord always before me. No matter what the time of the day, it ought to be our spirit, it ought to be our attitude. Lord, you first, I'll follow. So always is indicative of time. It also includes places and events. It means that whatever life consists of, there's the Lord in my face. Whatever else is going on in my life, there He is. Now, His throne is in the heavens. The earth is His footstool. And if that God is in front of you, that's all you can see. You don't see anything else. I have set the Lord always before me. Speaks of places and events. Whether life consists of joy or heartache, convenience or inconvenience, highs or lows, light or dark, calm or turmoil, peace or conflict, strength or weakness, health or sickness, or assurance or doubts, He needs to be right there. I have set the Lord always before me. Whatever the events, whatever the circumstances of life, our attitude and our spirit needs to be, Lord, you first, I'll follow. I'll follow. Jesus spoke two very important words, follow me. Follow me. That's what we read here in Psalm 16. Lord, you first, I'll follow. You know how many decisions would be avoided? Lord, you first, I'll follow. You know how many situations would be avoided? Lord, you first, I'll follow. Sometimes we have to go to places where we don't want to go. Do things that we don't want to do. Lord, you first, I'll follow. Lord, you first. It shouldn't be our attitude, well, we got to do it, let's just get this done with. Lord, you first, I'll follow. I have set the Lord always before me. It means that no matter what time it is, no matter what the events, no matter what the circumstances, I acknowledge that He is God. And I acknowledge that He is there. But not only is He God, and not only is He there, He is there as my master. He is there as my rock, my guide, my shield. My refuge, my friend. And the psalmist is saying, I am focused upon Him. I am pursuing Him. He is my object of faith. He is my object of hope. And His glory is my ultimate end. He is my purpose. And I am committed to Him. I have set the Lord always before me. May it always be, Lord, you first, I'll follow. You first, I'll follow. I have set the Lord always before me. I foresaw the Lord always before my face. Oh, may we understand that this is the way to live. This is the way to live. I have set the Lord before me. I foresaw the Lord always before my face. Oh, how those words need to be stamped and engraved upon our soul. To get up in the morning as soon as we open our eyes, and there He is. To go through our day, and there He is. That's a glorious thing. You see, if we're walking along, God is right there. But suddenly we make a turn, and God's over here. We've made a wrong turn. You better turn around where He's right there again. That's a wrong turn. I don't care what the reason is for making the turn. It's a wrong turn. I have set the Lord always before me. So we must ask ourselves, in what position? We all here believe the God of this book. We're not following, our theology is not the God that is being preached today. Most of us know better than that. But we have to ask ourselves, in what position do I see God in my life? Is He always right there? Or is He way over here somewhere? Is He somebody that I just put on the shelf and go to whenever I need Him? Is He a fire escape? Or is He right there? Right there. Husbands and wives, if God is right there in front of a husband, if God is right there in front of a wife, that's going to be a good marriage. You can't get off track keeping Him right there. So what is the position that we see God in our lives? Again, we need to always have the attitude and spirit. Lord, You first. I'll follow. The Lord tells us to do something. I mean, He comes, He sits right next to us, and He says, I want you to do such and such. What are we to do? We're to do what He said. But you better take the attitude, even if you're doing what He said, Lord, You first. I'll follow. Lord, You first. I'm right behind You. All that would be engraved upon our hearts, upon our lives. Young people need to learn to live their lives. God, right there. Right there. In a day of pornography, in a day of smut, in a day of filth, you can't even drive down the road. You need to have God right in front of you. Keep your mind off of all the filth and the nonsense that comes from all sides. So, oh, what a wonderful, wonderful thought. I have set the Lord always before me. God help us that would be true of our lives. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us in verse 7.